Greetings, warriors, veterans, and American-loving citizens from sea to shining sea. Welcome to Frontlines of Freedom. Hoo-ah! I'm Colonel Danny Gillum. This is just in from a friend in Israel. Quote, French President Macron has declared that France, which hasn't won a war since Charlemagne, will not cooperate with Israel in a strike against Iran. Now the Iranians are really worried, as having France on your side is a handicap. Macron also announced an arms embargo against Israel, a courageous move from a country that sells virtually no arms to Israel. Okay, and our nation's most incompetent former chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, retired General Mark Milley, just claimed that Trump is a fascist through and through. Yep, just like Hitler. However, this is a compliment. When an incompetent coward calls you names, he's actually saying you're not like him. Remember a few years ago when the Biden-Harris administration decided to do a rapid abandonment of Afghanistan? Milley was the guy who got it done. We left in the hands of the Taliban billions of dollars of our newest high-tech weapons, equipment, vehicles, ammunition, as well as American citizens and Afghan citizens who worked with us and were promised we'd take care of them. A leader with honor and integrity and courage would have refused this as an act of treason. He would have refused and resigned. You know, very weak leaders always avoid really strong leaders. That's why Milley hates Trump. Okay, joining me at the 50 caliber microphone today is Marine vet Skip Coriel. Done any shooting lately, Skip?
Yeah, actually, Colonel, I've done quite a bit of pistol shooting lately. Went out last week, went out the week before that. I've probably put 1,000 rounds down range just in the last 2 weeks. So, hey, I am feeling good. I am cocked, locked, ready to rock. I am on target. I'm in the bullseye. I'm in the zone, Colonel.
Wow. In that case, I better come down and shoot with you sometime soon. Here's what we have for you today. On news and comments by the Colonel, I'm going to address probable terrorist strikes here in our country. They will likely come soon. Then Chief Warrant Officer Roland Ashby will contribute his warrant wisdom. Retired Air Force General Dick Clark will then discuss his role as the Executive Director of the College Football Playoffs. Then Marine vet Andrew Fink will discuss his plans for future service. Next, we'll review last weekend's Service Academy football games. And General Chris Petty will present the Battle of the Month.
Hey, troops, please invite your friends to join us at this time on this great radio station. Then head on out to frontlinesoffreedom.com and sign up for our free e-newsletter. And join the conversation at facebook.com/frontlinesoffreedom.
We welcome your input to this show. Send us your ideas and comments through our website, frontlinesoffreedom.com, or by Facebook. And now it's time for news and comments by the Colonel on Frontlines of Freedom. And first, the news. Take us there, Skip.
Well, Colonel, the FBI arrested an Afghan man who they say was inspired by ISIS and was plotting an Election Day attack targeting large crowds here in the U.S., the Justice Department said. Nasser Ahmad Tawhidi, 27, of Oklahoma City, told investigators after his arrest that he'd planned his attack on Election Day next month and that he and a co-conspirator expected to die as martyrs.
You know, given the millions of illegals in our nation, it's safe to say that they are not the only ones planning this kind of trouble.
And federal authorities have deported some of the 8 Tajik migrants suspected of having ties to ISIS and plotting at least one attack here before being rounded up in New York and 2 other cities. The squad of terror suspects from Tajikistan crossed our southern border, some illegally and others using the Biden-Harris administration's CBP One Phone app. In close coordination with the FBI, these individuals were detained in June, have remained in ICE custody since then, and either have already been removed from the U.S. or remain in ICE custody pending completion of their removal proceedings, a Homeland Security rep said.
The ones already removed could just come back, though. What the heck? Yep, there are terrorists here in the United States. We have no idea how many. We'll discuss more about that in the next segment.
And both Ukraine and Russia use foreign fighters. A number of British volunteers have been killed fighting for Ukraine. Russian losses on the battlefield are currently at a daily average of 1,200 casualties. So Russia recruits soldiers from pro-Moscow African states and international mercenaries and North Korea. The North Korean troops were promised to Vladimir Putin by President Kim Jong-un during a state visit to Pyongyang. North Korea is a major supplier of arms and other military equipment to Russia. In return, Russian scientists are thought to be providing expertise on the production of intercontinental ballistic missiles. South Korea and North Korea remain fierce enemies, and the Seoul government has threatened to increase its military support for Ukraine in a tit-for-tat response.
This is crazy. I sincerely hope that the war in Ukraine will come to an end in the near future. No one seems to be winning, and lots of people are dying, and it may clearly lead to other wars.
And NATO defense ministers are meeting in Brussels this month to discuss the future of the alliance's relationship with Russia, potentially upending decades of foreign policy. Relations between NATO and Russia deteriorated sharply following the invasion of Ukraine. Despite increased tensions, the NATO-Russia Founding Act, signed in 1997, remains in effect. The act outlines a mutual aim to build a stable, peaceful, and undivided Europe. NATO states are now looking to redefine their future relationship with Moscow. Allies will map out different elements of the Russian strategy and advance the debates inside the alliance that takes us to subjects like the future of the NATO-Russia Founding Act, a U.S. official said.
This is a wise move. Russia is definitely seeking to build an empire by controlling other nations, as they did with the USSR. Their President Putin is an evil but powerful man. They're not dealing with a rational man as they once were.
And Russian Ambassador Anatoly Antonov issued an ominous warning to us after it was announced that he was returning to Moscow after being here for 7 years. The key item was the war between Ukraine and Russia. Prior to his departure, Antonov said that the current war in Ukraine will continue to sour relations between the U.S. and Russia. Quote, Project Ukraine is dragging American politicians only further into an abyss from which it is increasingly difficult to get out, Antonov said. As we see, the administration can only respond to the victories of Russian troops in Donbas and the failure of the provocation of the Ukrainian armed forces in the Kursk region by using the same hackneyed thesis about support as long as we can. Antonov argued, Washington is continuing a dangerous discussion about the possibility of giving Ukrainians permission to strike deep into Russian territory with Western long-range missiles. According to the diplomat, the continued attacks would only provoke Russian President Putin.
I guess the Russian ambassador doesn't see the many reports I see of Russian troops being defeated and targets in Russia being struck. It's clear that most senior Russian military officers are not competent, but I have no idea how long either side can keep this up.
And rumors have continued to swirl in recent days over the status of Esmail Khani, the head of Iran's extraterritorial Quds force, who hasn't been seen in public for several weeks. Khani has been conspicuously absent since he traveled to Beirut 2 days after the massive Israeli airstrike late last month that killed Hezbollah leader Hassan Nasrallah and several other top commanders, including an Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps deputy commander. Some say he died, others that he's under arrest.
If you're from Iran and you don't kill a lot of Jews, you're in big trouble. Doubly so if your leaders get killed. The Iranian government is pure evil.
And Iran has warned U.S. allies in the Middle East against assisting Israel in potential attacks following Iran's recent missile strike on Israel. Gulf states concerned about their oil facilities have refused to allow Israeli jets to use their airspace. Iran claims readiness for proportionate retaliation, threatening to strike Israeli infrastructure if targeted. The U.S. aims to limit escalation, while Israel considers severe retaliation. Tehran warns against disproportionate action, asserting it only targeted military facilities in its recent attack.
And that's the news. As Americans, it's our responsibility to ensure that our nation is well-run and on the right path. Politics and politicians are confusing. We can work together. Concerned Veterans for America can assist you, even if you're not a vet, in getting involved in getting our nation back on track. Working with them is one of the things I do. Check cvafrontlines.com. That's cvafrontlines.com. This is Colonel Denny Gillum. Coming up on Frontlines of Freedom, I'll share comments by the Colonel. We'll enjoy some more wisdom. And then we'll talk with General Dick Clark. At ease, troops, take a break. It's time to switch to Patriot Mobile, America's only Christian conservative wireless provider. Patriot Mobile offers dependable nationwide coverage, giving you access to all three major networks. Keep your number, keep your phone, or upgrade. When you switch to Patriot Mobile, you support the First and Second Amendment, the sanctity of life, our military veterans, and first responder heroes. Just go to patriotmobile.com/frontlines. Get a free month when you use the offer code FRONTLINES.
This is Marine Vet Skip Coriel with your Home Defense Tip of the Week. Criminals love the cover of darkness. It hides them and provides a tactical advantage and cover for them to launch an attack. Avoid dark alleys and unlit parking lots. When possible, always park under a light and avoid areas with a reputation for high crime. Remember, if you can't see the bad guy, then you can't avoid his ambush. This is just one more way to keep your family safe. For more useful tips on home and personal defense, visit homedefenseshow.com.
Silver has increased 24% over the past 15 months and is a solid financial investment. Silver is projected to continue its rise and is nowhere near its 2011 high of $49 an ounce. So there's still a lot of room for investment growth. Call 800-UCB-GOLD or go to their website at universalcoin.com/Denny. That's universalcoin.com/Denny.
HelpVet.net is a national help center helping the military community with all of your everyday needs. Whether you need a realtor, an attorney, health-related services, or information on retirement planning, financial resources, or more, our vast network of hand-picked qualified service providers are waiting to help you. With up-to-date military news and resources, you can find answers to all of your daily needs at HelpVet.net. HelpVet.net wants to thank you for your service, and may God continue to bless the U.S. of A.
If you ever have to defend yourself or your family, you will likely need legal support, as there is almost always an investigation. After you call 911, call U.S. Law Shield so you can have immediate legal support. This is why U.S. Law Shield was formed. They're here to help people through events they never thought would happen to them. Their attorneys are available 24/7, 365. Learn more or sign up at uslawshield.com, promo code FRONTLINES. That's uslawshield.com, promo code FRONTLINES. This is Colonel Denny Gillum. It is 20 minutes after the hour, and your information and listening to the Front Lines of Freedom all across America. Troops, even if our economy wasn't a mess, with inflation going crazy and prices up way out of sight, I'd still recommend that you do some investing in precious metals, gold and silver. I encourage you to join me in purchasing these solid investments from Universal Coin and Bullion. Find them at universalcoin.com/Denny. That's universalcoin.com/Denny. And now it's time for comments by the Colonel. In 1997, George Tenet, then Director of Central Intelligence, sounded an alarm about Osama bin Laden and al-Qaeda. In the 4 years before al-Qaeda attacked our World Trade Center and the Pentagon, Tenet testified publicly multiple times about the threat they posed to us, at home and abroad. The CIA and the FBI didn't uncover the time, place, or method of the CIA plot, but Tenet's warnings were prophetic. 25 years later, FBI Director Christopher Wray is sounding similar alarms. His testimony to Congress and other public statements were explicit. Wray said, quote, "When I sat here last year, I walked through how we were already in a heightened threat environment," end quote. And after Hamas attacked Israel on October 7th, quote, "We've seen the threat from foreign terrorists rise to a whole nother level," end quote. Wray has repeatedly pointed to security gaps at our southern border, where thousands of people each week enter our country undetected. And the commander of U.S. Central Command, General Eric Kurilla, has been pointing out the capabilities of the terrorist groups his forces are fighting in the Middle East and South Asia. These include al-Qaeda, ISIS, and especially ISIS-K, the ISIS affiliate operating in Afghanistan and Pakistan. The outgoing director of the National Counterterrorism Center described, quote, "an elevated global threat environment" while speaking at a conference in Doha last month. You and I don't have access to intelligence information, but Ray's and Carrillo's statements certainly reflect what they know and what their people have had to deal with. Since 9/11, other officials have warned about terrorist threats that, fortunately, didn't materialize, but that doesn't mean Ray's and Carrillo's comments should be discounted. In many cases, terrorist warnings triggered government responses that thwarted terrorist plans. Complacency is a greater threat than alarmism. Combined, the stated intentions of terrorist groups, the growing capabilities they've demonstrated in recent successful and failed attacks around the world, and that several serious plots in the U.S. have been foiled point to a clear conclusion. We face a serious threat of a terrorist attack in the months ahead. Assessments of national security threats must account for both the level of risk and the scale of potential consequences. And with terrorism, both should compel the administration to take action now, but they assure us that our borders are secure and they're taking no action. When terrorists make explicit threats, Washington should listen. In the fall of 1999, our intelligence agencies collected information that suggested bin Laden and Al-Qaeda were preparing to launch attacks to coincide with the millennium. Although the enemy and timing were clear, the targets and method of attack weren't. This lack of detail didn't stop our government from making swift and sweeping response. The CIA conducted operations in 53 countries against 38 targets, including the detention of dozens of suspected terrorists. The CIA engaged foreign partners, most notably working with Canadian authorities to break up an Algerian terror cell in Canada and helping Jordanian authorities arrest 16 terrorists planning an attack on tourists in Amman. Thus, no terrorist group successfully carried out an attack then. Among the more celebrated successes was the arrest of Al-Qaeda operative Ahmed Rassam. This ended the group's plan to attack Los Angeles International Airport in December of 1999. Immigration officers in Washington State, on high alert, pulled Rassam aside at the U.S.-Canadian border. In his car trunk were 100 pounds of high explosives and detonators. We need a similar effort to counter today's terrorist threat. The intelligence and security communities must consistently explain the danger to policymakers and the American public. Ray and Carrillo have been vocal about their concerns, but for some reasons, other officials have not. Congressional intelligence committees should convene unclassified hearings with the directors of national intelligence, the CIA, the FBI, the National Counterterrorism Center, and ask each to offer their candid views. Policymakers need a clear picture of the threat before they can determine how to proceed and how to bring the American public aboard. Our Border Patrol reports about 200,000 encounters with migrants at the border each month so far this year, and with thousands more each week crossing the border undetected. We need to take additional action to stop terrorists from exploiting this overwhelmed channel into our country. Who knows how many terrorists have crossed in the past few years? This means we need our borders are to close our border now. We must also address threats before they come from overseas. ISIS-K poses the most immediate threat. It's based in Afghanistan, where we've not been since our crazy withdrawal in 2021. How about working with the Taliban? They again rule in Afghanistan and consider ISIS-K an adversary. Maybe coordinating with them to target ISIS-K militants? We should consider limited intelligence exchange, where we offer information about possible ISIS-K targets inside Afghanistan in return for information from them about ISIS-K's capabilities and plans for overseas attacks. These steps will be difficult at the best of times, let alone just ahead of an election, but terrorists strike without warning. For the past two decades, the efforts of our military and intelligence communities have spared the country a second 9/11 or worse. This is great, but the work isn't done. The terrorist attack is a predictable catastrophe. As the threat increases, our government must rise to the challenge to protect our homeland. Why has neither our president nor our vice president told us about this so that we can be better prepared to defend ourselves? I suggest that their silence suggests total incompetency. And those are my comments for today. This is Colonel Denny Gillum. You're listening to Frontlines of Freedom. Now we get to enjoy some warrant wisdom with Chief Warrant Officer Roland Ashby. What do you have this week, Roland?
You know, for the first time in 2 years, the active Army has met its recruiting mission for 2024, bringing in 55,000 new soldiers. And for 2025, the Army has a goal of bringing in 61,000 new soldiers, and the Guard is looking to increase its end strength from 325,000 to 329,000. The Army Reserve is also looking to increase, and they'll be looking to direct commissions and better technology to find people with the right fit. The Army looks to the reserves for much of its strategic capability in the event of a large-scale combat mission. Some of the positions, such as medical doctors, chaplains, and experts in artificial intelligence and machine learning, are niche specialties, but those are what are needed to support the active Army's overall global mission. Army Personnel Command have been looking at ways to speed up the commission process for those potential soldiers so they can fill the needed gaps. Those specialties, whether they're from civilian experiences or through Army training, are necessary for the reserve to achieve its mission of providing the bulk of major combat operation support to the active duty Army. Nearly 100% of the Army's theater opening capabilities reside in the reserves. Between 70 and 80% of the Army's medical, water purification, and interrogation capabilities are also in the reserves. For reservists, this means that if the Army is going to go someplace in bulk, they're going to be going as well. You know, since 2001, the military has heavily depended on reserve and National Guard troops. This is very different than it was during the Cold War. Today, I know very few reservists who haven't been deployed at least once in their career. However, prior to 2001, I knew many high-ranking officers and enlisted troops who had never deployed at all during their reserve career. It's because of the change from a strategic reserve to an operational reserve that we must continue to get creative in recruiting to ensure that we have national defense covered. For Frontlines of Freedom, I'm Chief Warrant Officer Roland Ashby. Back to you, Colonel.
Thanks, Roland. I always appreciate your comments. Straight ahead on Frontlines of Freedom, we'll talk with retired General Dick Clark. Then we'll talk with Marine vet Andrew Fink. All this is coming up. I'm Colonel Danny Gillum. You're standing tall with the Frontlines of Freedom. I'll be right back. Troops, it's time for sit-ups. Do 50, then stand at ease.
Veterans have a unique perspective on healthcare, foreign policy, and federal spending.
Concerned Veterans for America provides veterans and the military community a chance to share that perspective and drive change that will make Americans safer and more prosperous.
Want to join the movement and the thousands of activists in our grassroots army? Visit cvafrontlines.com to learn more and join the movement. That's cvafrontlines.com.
Friends, there's not too many things I enjoy more than helping veterans and eating great beef jerky. Now I can do both. My good friends at Tango3.org and America's Best Beef Jerky use the highest quality beef to make the best jerky I've ever tasted. Trust me, I've eaten a lot. But that's not all. They give 100% of the profit to veterans programs, mental health, and suicide prevention. Go to americasbestbeefjerky.com and order now. And at checkout, check the Frontlines of Freedom promo code. Troops, welcome back to our nation's largest military veteran talk radio show, Frontlines of Freedom. I'm Colonel Danny Gillum. Troops, please do send me your comments and questions. Email me through frontlinesoffreedom.com. It's an honor to welcome to the show retired Air Force Lieutenant General Richard Clark. He's now the executive director of the College Football Playoff Committee. Yes, he's an Air Force Academy grad and played football while he was there. So welcome, General.
All right. Thank you, Denny. Thanks for having me today.
And of course, we're joined by my co-host, Quentin Roberts. Welcome, bro.
Thanks, Denny. Of course, I'm still in mourning after Air Force took a beating due at the hands of Navy. But the show must go on.
Well put,
young
man.
Good to see you, Quentin. Good to see you, brother.
Nice to see you too, Rich. It's great to see you.
Yeah, man.
Okay, Rich, let's start by talking about your military career. Why did you go to the Air Force Academy?
Well, I went to play football. I got recruited by Ken Hatfield. And my family is not military. Service Academy wasn't necessarily something I was going to do. But he came to visit our house and he had dinner with me and my mom and my dad, and they loved him. And he said, just come out for a visit. Just come see it. That's all. And I went out there and fell in love with the place. I wanted to fly. So it was seemed like a natural fit for me. And I decided to do it. And then my mom was like, wait, I just wanted you to go visit. I didn't think you were going to go there. But in the end, I made that choice. And it was really football that brought me there, because I wanted to play Division One football, get a great education, and do something purposeful.
Okay. And you said you wanted to fly, and I know you were a pilot. What kind of planes did you fly?
Well, I flew a lot of different planes, primarily the B-1 bomber, but I flew the EC-135 Looking Glass. I was an instructor pilot in T-6, T-1. I flew T-38. I also flew the C-21 for a little while when I was in Germany. That was awesome. But so a few different planes, but the B-1 was my primary aircraft. And I used to say, man, I can't believe they pay me to fly. I loved flying, and it was a great way to serve. But then I only flew for probably 20, 25 years. Then I got into the staff job. Then I realized why they were paying me, because I had to earn my money. So, but it was great. It was great.
Yeah, I'll refer to that as flying a desk. Is that how you guys refer to it too?
It was nothing like flying. I don't even consider that. I was chained to that desk working. But I love my time in the Air Force overall. So it was great.
And I know you served in combat. Will you talk about that?
Sure. So I had two combat tours as a flyer. We flew in OIF and OEF, Operation Iraqi Freedom and Enduring Freedom, deployed once to Thumrait, Oman, and once to Diego Garcia. And then on my third combat tour, it was a year long, a 365, and I actually worked for Multinational Force Iraq. Basically, I was working with the Army in Iraq for a year, and that was probably the most intense of the deployments I had. But I had three of them, and you know, you learn a lot in a deployment, and you get close to people, but you know, I was proud to do it, and that was it, three times.
And did you fly a B-1 all those times, or were you flying something else?
I flew a B-1, yeah. I was a squadron commander then, so we took 24 B-1s overseas on two of them. But on the third one, I was literally on the ground living in Iraq at Alpha Palace where the grounds were, lived in a CHU there, compact housing unit or something like that. But anyway, it was Army living for sure. Well, not the worst of Army living because it wasn't a tent, but I did gain a new respect for what our Army brothers and sisters go through. So it was a good experience. Wouldn't want to do it again.
You know, it is a good experience when we experience what our brothers and sisters in arms are going through, different than what we do. Because we pick on each other, but we definitely are brothers and sisters, aren't we?
Absolutely. Every day except one. When we play Army and when we play Navy, there's no brothers and sisters. It's time to get it on. But every other day, 364 days a year, it's all about teamwork and working together to serve our country. So I agree with you.
Well, and I have to totally agree with your exception, because my wife and I go to the Army-Navy game every year, and there are brothers and sisters every, but not that day. I don't care. I want to beat them in the ground.
That's right.
Yes.
Denny, if I may, I'd like to piggyback on that question you asked about Richard's time in combat, because he talked about a situation in which he had members in one of his missions that earned the Distinguished Flying Cross. And when he selected a young group of pilots to go on a mission. And I wanted to see for our audience if he could recount that story.
Yeah, absolutely, Q. So it was a young crew, and I got a little pushback from my flight commanders because they were like, they're too young. We don't think we're ready to put them out there. But my response was, they're trained, they're ready, they have to go do this. And that crew went out on a mission. They had a 24 2,000-pound JDAM, Joint Direct Attack Munition, GPS-guided weapon. So you know, pretty accurate, a lot of destruction, but they went up and they hit their first 12 targets. They had 12 bombs left after that. So our typical mission, if you had weapons left, you would just go into an orbit and wait until someone else needed bombs, or you got to the point where you hit your bingo fuel, which is the fuel you need to get back home. And so they were orbiting and they got a call from AWACS, which is the Airborne Warning and Control System, command and control aircraft, that said there were some troops in contact with the enemy and they needed bombs. So the crew was close to their bingo fuel. It was about time for them to go home, but they weren't quite there yet. So this young aircraft commander said, hey, we can do it. Give us the radio frequency, give us the coordinates. And they start headed to those coordinates. And as they got close, they dialed the radio frequency in and they could start talking to this joint tactical air controller on the ground. And he painted this position for them, a visual picture of, there was a ridgeline, Iraqi armored vehicles were shelling down on top of about 150 of our soldiers. And so they started getting coordinates from this JTAC, and they started putting weapons onto these armored vehicles one at a time. And they were just, they were taking them out. And then the Iraqis started firing missiles and anti-aircraft artillery at them. So they're threat reacting, but they're getting these bombs on target. And then they hit their bingo fuel, meaning it was time for them to go home because they had just enough gas to get back. And they told that to the JTAC. He said, hey, if you leave us now, we're going to lose people. We need some more bombs. So the crew said, okay, we'll keep giving you bombs. And they did. And they continued to deliver these weapons. And eventually they delivered almost all of them. But the JTAC said, hey, the shelling is stopped. You've neutralized the adversary. You're cleared off. And when they turned their nose to go home, they didn't have nearly enough gas to get back home. and they're in the middle of Iraq. They start flying home. They're thinking, oh, man, we're in trouble. They can't find an alternate runway to land at. They're thinking, if we're talking to AWACS, there's no tankers in the area. And they're thinking if they don't find a runway soon, they're going to be ejecting in Iraq, which is not a good scenario. Well, then a tanker heard this conversation outside of Iraq and volunteered and agreed to fly into Iraq with no defenses, unarmed, unafraid. And they came into Iraq and gave this crew gas. Crew was able to get enough gas to go home. They came back. And when they got close, I was the squadron commander just waiting because they were about 3 hours late. And I thought, you know, man, I haven't heard from these guys. What have I done? Then about 30 minutes out, they radioed that they were on their way in. So I met them at the airplane, and the aircraft commander, young guy, comes down and he's just messed. I mean, his hair is messed up. His back is sweaty. You know how when your back gets salt stains after you work out really hard? Sure. He was just tore up. And, wow. And I said, hey, what happened? And he's like, sir, we overflew our bingo. And I was like, well, there's certainly more to the story than that. So we'll talk about it when we go into the intelligence debrief. And they told me the story, and the intelligence officers, what the story I just told you. I put them in for accommodation, and they were all awarded the Distinguished Flying Cross. The best thing, though, was they got an email from that Joint Tactical Air Controller about a week later saying, thanking them for saving lives, because he said, hey, if you hadn't stayed there with us, we were done. So that was probably their biggest reward. But they made me proud. You know, these were some young airmen that knew American lives are on the line. So we got to do what we got to do.
Army lives. That's joint interoperability, too. I tell you, teamwork. Right. Like you that's say, right. Brothers, every day but one.
Every day but one. And, you know, honestly, even if we were playing Army that day, I think they still would have done the same thing. So, then, it depends, right?
It does. Okay. And I think your final assignment was as superintendent of the Air Force Academy. Am I right?
Absolutely. Yes. Yes.
Well, there's more to discuss about Rich's career, and he's going to stay with us. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. Yeah, it's push-up time. They want you to do 103 push-ups. That's how many I do. Well, I used to before I got into my mid-80s. Then take a break, but stay in the area. We'll be right back.
Friends, Adam here, Patriot Foods, U.S. only company. Frozen fruits and vegetables straight from our dirt, not overseas. Support the U.S. farmer. When you shop at PatriotFoods.com, we give back to a military family in need. We got to take care of each other, my friends. We have to. So important. 10% off PatriotFoods.com. 10% off promo code FREEDOM and shop today.
When considering precious metals investments, credibility is paramount. That's why I chose Universal Coin and Bullion. They have a long-standing reputation in the industry that instills confidence in investors. Plus, the company's president, Dr. Mike Fulgens, is recognized as America's gold expert by his peers and the U.S. government, and was named Dealer of the Year by the American Numismatic Association. Call 800-UCB-GOLD or go to their website at universalcoin.com/Denny. This is Colonel Denny Gillum. This is the final formation for this hour on Frontlines of Freedom. We'll continue our conversation with General Dick Clark. And Quentin, you're the football guy on our team. Pick it up from here.
Oh, Denny, this is a real treat for me because, of course, Richard and I played together. And, you know, there's so many defining characteristics. He was one of the leaders of the 85 famed Band of Brothers team that went 12-1, beat Texas in the Blue Bonnet Bowl, we had the bowl game in Houston. And of course, he at the time, I think, had the pleasure of escorting the astronaut's daughter, Colonel Gregory, I think it was at that time.
Yeah, I escorted her, but that's all that happened there. So just for the record, you know.
Well, you know, you are in a wonderful position right now after having been at the Air Force Academy and kind of getting back in the college football landscape and being near the NC2A and being around the teams and the players and around all this conference realignment. And then the opportunity to go to the college football playoff. Why don't you tell us how this opportunity came about and what made you jump at it?
Well, yeah, Quentin, I feel blessed to be here, right? And you know me, you've known me for a long time. And I am right now in a position that I absolutely don't deserve, but I am so excited to be here. And it all came about because a search firm contacted me while I was a superintendent, and I had met these guys at a different search that I was a part of looking for our conference commissioner in the Mountain West Conference, Gloria Navarez. And they reached out to me and they said, hey, they're looking for a new executive director of the college football playoff. You want to put your name in the hat? They want a long shot candidate, you know, a non-traditional candidate. I was like, long shot. That sounds like me, right up my alley. And I asked him if I got a chance. He said, you have a chance, but you're the long shot. So I did. I put my name in the hat. I went through a series of interviews, and each time, you know, they whittle it down, the number of people that are getting interviewed. And lo and behold, I got the job, and I can't tell you how excited I was. The interesting thing, I had also before that been selected to be on the selection committee. So, you know, the group of people that get to pick or get to rank order the best teams in America every year. So I was thrilled to do that. But that, you know, that's a volunteer position and you only do it for those 6 weeks in the season. But then when this came up, I just couldn't believe it. Over the moon.
Well, they've got an excellent person in the job, and you are very deserving. You're just very humble about it. But you talked about, let's digging into those issues a little bit. You talked about ranking the best teams. You've got the job of the field has been expanded to from 4 to 12. And I believe I heard you say in another interview that they're looking at the best teams, not the most deserving teams. And my question is, how do we distinguish the best from the most deserving?
Yeah, Quentin. So, you know, the most deserving really is, as a fan, as a casual observer, you look at a team's record, right? And you go, you know what? They're undefeated. They deserve to be in the playoff. They're a great team. They deserve to be in the playoff. But really what you need is people that have a discerning eye, that look at the data, that can compare teams that have maybe different schedules or in different conferences. Just because a team is undefeated doesn't mean they're necessarily better than a team that wasn't. Maybe that team just had a really tough schedule, right? So you have to determine if that's the case or not by looking at the data, by looking at the games, watching the team, seeing how they perform, and really comparing things like strength of schedule, head-to-head competitions, competition against common opponents. Those kinds of things help you determine really who's the best team. Because, you know, a 10-2 team might be better actually than a 12-0 team.
Well, of course, you know, all of this is stemming from the Florida State last year, not getting into the playoff after they were undefeated. They were a conference champion and they didn't get into the playoff. And, you know, the question is, the reason was because their quarterback got hurt. And so and when you go from 4 to 5th and 6th teams are going to complain. When you go to 12 to 13th and 14th teams are going to complain who don't get in. You know, and the basketball is 64, but 65, 66 complain. You know, you're always going to have those who think right. That they should have been in. So you have a very thankless job. But I tell you what I'm looking forward to. The Southern teams coming up north, like it's getting cold already here in Ohio and Michigan. And that's now we're going to even the playing field a little bit. And that should be awesome for, you know, games. We saw Vanderbilt beat Alabama over the weekend.
Oh, my goodness.
I mean, was that great for college football or what?
Yeah, it's crazy.
You know, and so it is. But let me ask you this. And that is, if Army or Navy beats Notre Dame and is a champ of the AAC, are they in?
Well, that depends, right? Because then they will be compared to all the other conference champions and the top five conference champions get in. So they will be looked at. There's going to be 9 other conference champions. They're going to the selection committee will, take a hard look at them and determine really who's best among them. Who are the 5 best of those 9? So if they're in there, I mean, honestly, if they beat Notre Dame, that's a huge feat, and that'll be a feather in their cap, right? But doesn't necessarily mean they're going to get in. So we'll just have to see. And, you know, you bring up another point that I wanted to hit on. Those campus games that you're talking about, so teams 5 through 8 will get a home field advantage for the first round of the playoff, and teams are going to have to travel to their campus. Those are going to be the best games. Like, some of those camps will be the best game they ever had. It's going to be crazy. So I'm with you, man. I'm excited about that first round and what that's going to be like, because it's going to be craziness. But that's college football, right? You got to go play where you got to play. You got to get it done, right?
It is. And now, one thing I want you to do, too, is tell us how the college football playoff committee is separate from the NC2A. Most people think they're one and the same. Most people don't understand there's a distinction. Explain that distinction for us.
Right. Yeah. So the NC2A really is the governing organization for all of college athletics, right? And they all sports, all levels, and they are the governing body. Our job, though, is to really put on and make sure that we have the right teams in the college football playoff. So we are employed by all the conference commissioners. Those are our bosses. And then one president from each league is the board of managers or the board of directors that we also are responsible to. So our job isn't necessarily compliance and governance. It's really to make sure that we're pulling in the right teams for the playoff with a committee that selects them, but also establishing the protocols that they use, and then to make sure that all of the games happen. And we have 11 games that we are responsible for, and we need to make sure that America sees them and that we crown a champion on the field. And so our role is just a little bit different, although the NCAA is a partner. I just came from an NCAA meeting because I'm on a committee there. So we are connected, but we do not fall under the purview of the NCAA.
Rich, I want to thank you for this far-reaching discussion of the college football landscape. That was an excellent explanation on how the College Football Playoff Committee relates to the NC2A. And this year is especially exciting to us and our listeners, given the success of Army and Navy on the football field. To think that with an undefeated season, either could go to the college football playoff is a scenario that college football has not seen in a long time. We also know and appreciate that college football, the sport we know and love, is in good hands with you as the executive director of the College Football Playoff at the helm. With that, I'll turn it back over to Denny.
Thank you, Dick, for joining us today and for your service to our nation. Hey, don't go away, Quentin. We're back on in a bit. This concludes the first hour of the show. We'll start the second hour talking with Marine vet Andrew Fink. Then Quentin and I will discuss last weekend's Surface Academy football games. And General Chris Petty will present the Battle of the Month. And of course, we'll conclude with our weekly mailbag, military history, and our self-defense report. U.S. Law Shield is a part of the Front Lines of Freedom team. If you have weapons for defense of your family and yourself, and you ever use a legal weapon, you'll need legal defense. U.S. Law Shield is the team my wife and I use. Go to uslawshield.com and use the promo code FRONTLINES. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. Troops, it's time for pull-ups. Do 40 good ones, maybe 20 more push-ups, then grab some protein, rehydrate with water, and finally, put a big smile on your proud-to-be-an-American face and send me your thoughts by email or on Facebook.